St. George's number one station with Washington County's top talk show, The Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the program. I'm Andy. We got a cast of characters today. Jack Lancaster is in the house with me. I didn't get your music queued up again. Sorry about that. And Mello is back in town after chasing Taylor Swift around. Mello, you doing all right over there? Let's see. Get your button. You doing okay over there?
It was a great, great time. So much
fun. You had a nice time over there? Turn your microphone up a little more. Yeah, we can barely hear you. Mic one?
It's on.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
My light, is that better?
Yeah, we can hear you a little bit. Yeah. Well, welcome back. We missed you on Friday. So,
Thank you. Anyway,
we appreciate you being back. She was at a Taylor Swift concert in Arizona, folks.
I just got to ask the question.
She's a Swiftie. What?
How much did you pay for your tickets?
How much did you pay? He wants to know how much you paid. $200?
Oh, $120.
Okay.
I think you got a deal. I heard those things get outrageous.
Yeah, 9 hours online.
9 hours online. Oh, my gosh. I wouldn't do 9 hours online for anybody.
Was that one where you click and click and click and click and click and see if you can get in? Is that,
I'm clicking.
No, I mean to get the ticket. You had to click to...
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. All right. Well, I'm glad you got in. I got to stay in town, Jack, and I got to... listen to Lori Morgan and Pam Tillis Friday night on at TuaCon, the Grits and Glamour show.
Lori Morgan and Pam Tillis. Now, are they country?
Country singers, yes.
Okay, okay.
They were both big in the 90s.
They were at TuaCon?
They were at TuaCon, yeah.
How was the weather?
It was cold.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't rainy, but it was cold.
Yeah.
But it was a good show. They're both in their late 50s, early 60s, so they're not, it's not like Taylor Swift. I mean,
yeah.
I think Lori Morgan actually said, I have pairs of socks older than Taylor Swift.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
But it was a good show. I just felt bad for them. And, you know, we brought coats and blankets and stuff, but the singers, of course, they had a jacket on. They're up there singing. And
they're working, though. They're exercising.
Yeah, hopefully they weren't too cold. But it was a good concert. And I actually was texting back and forth this weekend with Pam Tillis, who is Mel Tillis' daughter. You remember Mel Tillis?
Oh, yeah. I love Mel Tillis.
Great singer.
Mel Tillis.
That's the guy, yeah. And a great songwriter. I found out, I was doing some research on Mel this weekend. He actually, if you think of some of the big hits of the 70s in particular in country music, he probably wrote that song.
Uh-huh.
He didn't sing a lot of big hits.
Yeah, he wrote a lot.
He wrote big hits for guys like George Strait and Randy Travis. That's into the 80s a little bit. But, some of the big you know, Charlie Pride and some of those guys back in the 70s. And Pam is carried on. She's a great songwriter in her own right as well. But.
That's cool. I went to a concert.
You did this weekend?
Last weekend. Okay. Weekend before last.
Okay.
Chicago in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I saw Chicago in Vegas before COVID.
Oh yeah.
Before COVID.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good show. My gosh.
Crazy. Those guys. Was it four original members?
There was three originals.
Original members.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you consider their first hit was like in 1968 or something.
Uh-huh.
Chicago Transit Authority. They must be in their 70s. They are in fact.
Oh yeah,
they're in their 70s. And they were still what? They were still doing what on stage? They were all over the place.
That trombone player was all over the place. I forget his name, but one of the original guys, the trumpet player, one of the original trumpet players, and then the keyboard. I don't remember the names, but. Pankow was one of them, I think.
Yeah, they made a joke. You know, Peter Cetera left the band in '85.
Right.
They made the joke that we got this new guy. He's only been with the band for like 32 years, or 40 years or something. He's the new guy.
Yeah, they actually have a different guy now that sings that part. Yeah,
okay.
He's only been with the band about 3 years. I couldn't tell you his name.
But he was good. Over 3 years.
He had a great voice. My gosh. Mm. And he was up there. He appeared to be an age similar to everybody else, the original guys.
same age group.
Yeah.
They were probably sitting around Denny's.
Oh, my gosh. It was a good show.
Yeah.
They were tight. It was almost really as good as Leonard and Friends.
Yeah. Which is funny because Leonard and Friends are playing their music.
Yeah, I know.
Chicago's music. But, it's good. Well, and you had front row seats to Leonard. You had front row seats to Chicago, I'm guessing.
We're trying to get him back again for the fall.
I'd go.
Yeah.
I'd go. I'll come sit by you. We'll dance on the front row.
All right. We'll do it.
Let's do it. Okay. Again, Jack Lancaster here today. Jack makes an appearance a couple times a month. I'll get your music queued up for the next commercial break. I forgot about it again today.
Well,
there's a lot of stress involved on Mondays.
I know. You got a lot of stuff going on.
I don't have a news guy on Mondays, too, so I have to be the news guy, too. That doubles my workload.
Okay.
So, but I'm sure glad to have you here, Jack.
I'm glad to be here. It's always good.
A couple of things we were going to talk about today. Let's start off with this could take up the whole show, but we'll start off with this and go from there. This is Rick Scott. I'm going to play a little sound bite from Rick Scott.
And Rick Scott is?
He's a Florida senator, Republican senator from Florida. And he got asked about, what he thought was our president, how good a job our president was doing. This is Rick Scott.
Every part of your federal government now, the banks, the border, everything is falling apart. We have such a crappy president and nothing. There's no accountability right now in federal government.
We have such a crappy president. He didn't mince words, did he?
Yeah, he did not.
He didn't mince words. There's a couple other sound bites, but I think that's good enough for now. It feels like everybody's been afraid to say that. I mean, Sean Hannity would say he's doing terrible. You know, Travis and Sexton, you know, Mark Levin. But as far as the other politicians, they were all, he needs to work on some things. Rick Scott came out and said, look, we got a crappy president who is not doing his job.
I don't know why. I mean, I guess I do know why. I can assume why. We don't know why. But, you know, he undid Biden. Every good policy that Trump had in place when it comes to immigration, mm-hmm. the first day in office, and
he was even inaugurated, really, he said he was going to.
Well,
do
he
it
said all. He was, yeah. But then the day in, he just reversed all those things. Yeah. But the thing is, and this is the thing that really makes me upset, by the way, and I is that we have one guy. Remember that song by Don Henley, "The Tired Old Man," that we elected king.
Oh, is that what it was?
He was referring to Reagan at the time.
The end of the innocence.
End of the innocence, and that's exactly what we do. We elect these presidents that are kind of like kings because they can do these executive orders and these decrees, and then the next king can come along and undo them. Mm-hmm. Well, what the hell? Why are we doing this? Why? Tirade, but you think about it. You think Congress was the first article of the Constitution, not the presidency, and it was the Congress that was supposed to have control because they're the most representative of we the people, not the president. Hmm. The president's going to be swayed by they elected old Washington to be the first president because he was just kind of retired and just kind of, you know, being the face of the country. You know, you think about back then, you know. What does the King and Queen of England do now? They kind of represent the institutionalization of the country, the heart of the country, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, they're the head of state, not the head of government.
But they do no policymaking whatsoever anymore.
And here we have a president that is policymaking left, right, and center, not just ours, but the Republicans before, which means the next one can come in and undo everything and redo it. So, like, I know I digress for a minute, but then, but Biden comes in and undoes every good thing that Trump did on the border. You know, he demoralizes the border agents. You know, the guys down there working on the border. They get this stupid photograph of the agents using horses with long reins, and then you guys are whipping these poor Haitians that are, you know, and all this stuff that is deliberately trying to undermine every single institution that we have that makes us who and what we are. And I'm sorry, I know we can get into right-wing conspiracy, and I'm a right-winger as much as the next guy, but the thing is what else conclusion can you come to? Really?
Yeah.
If you don't have a border, you don't have a country. And, you know, Biden, he likes to go to, I'm okay that we're helping Ukraine fight the Russians. I'll be honest with you. I'm okay with that because if we don't stop them there. But he seems to care more about their borders than he does ours. I know we've all heard that in the press. And when East Palestine, is it Indiana or Ohio?
Ohio.
Yep. Okay. What the heck? You know, you can't get Biden to show up over there. You can't get Buttigieg to show up over there only after it's been, 3 weeks after the fact?
Right.
And then, and at the same time, he lets this Chinese balloon fly over, you know, the whole freaking country, instead of shooting it down over Montana, where all it might do is hit a cow. I don't know. I honestly don't know. Like you said, Senator Rick Scott said, you know what I'd like to hear? I'd like to hear Senator Romney say something like that. You think we're going to hear anything like that out of him?
No.
And I think we've heard stuff like that out of Senator Lee.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The frustrating part when we go back to the border is that it's not just Mexicans coming across the border. It's like you mentioned, Haitians. It's Middle Easterners that go down to Mexico and then come up through the border because of how easy it is to get into our country. And there's no... there's very little in the way of health checks. Well, there's none if they're getting if they're coming across.
You've got almost every body, BODY, that comes across the border owes money to Coyote. Mm-hmm. The Coyotes are run by the cartels.
Mm-hmm.
The cartels are now setting up a state in Mexico as if they are the de facto government, because the government is too weak and too afraid to do anything about it, because the cartels have paid off the cops, they paid off the Mexican border supply, they've even paid off some of the American border agents, I'll tell you that right now. Hmm. They do that to get people across. They charge $5,000 to $7,000 per person to come across. Well, you times that by how many millions of people are coming across, this is $1 billion a month business.
Yeah.
Okay? And they're coming across, so why on earth are we allowing that? It's, in my opinion, if Americans aren't going to work the jobs that need to be worked because they're getting paid by the government to sit on their butts at home, some of them, okay? Mm-hmm. And then we allow an open border, and then we don't allow these folks that want to come here and work to work legally, so they got to work under the table for whatever jobs they can get. They don't want to come. So you've got these classes. You've got these smugglers that are smuggling these drugs and these ne'er-do-wells from other countries that are coming through a porous U.S.-Mexico border. And then you've got these people who are trying to make a better life for themselves.
True.
I don't blame them one bit to make a better life for themselves. I don't argue that motivation for them. If I was in their shoes, I would probably do the same thing, to be honest with you, okay? But then they don't have control, so we don't know who's coming across. We can't control the drugs that are coming across. And I'll tell you one other thing. U.S. people, we the people in the U.S., need to stop taking so many damn drugs and turn off the demand for this supply. Now, why on earth are we not doing that as well? Why are we, the people, allowing the drugs to be so proliferating? You talk about the homeless problem. What's one of the biggest common denominators for the homeless folks?
Drugs.
Right.
Yeah.
So this all kind of ties together. An open border with supply. Problem is where there's demand in the U.S. If we didn't have so much demand, there wouldn't be such a need to fill the demand.
True. But you look at something like our Washington County Drug Task Force.
Mm-hmm.
These men and women are out there doing an incredible job. I mean, we read about it all the time, a big drug bust here and there, and we have the drug-sniffing dogs and stuff. But if the problem is, like you say, multiplying exponentially, mm-hmm. the people coming into this country whose sole desire is to be a drug dealer or is to help, you know, grow this drug company, what chance do these guys have? If it's going to get worse and worse and worse, you know, like you said, until we stop the demand for it, which doesn't appear like there's going to be any stop in sight, then the drug task force have no chance.
I'll tell you what could happen, and this is a thing that's been talked about, and I don't like this as a solution. But one of the ways to curtail demand, and I'm not saying this is the only answer, but this is a answer, is legalize these drugs. Take it out of the black market. Okay? If you legalize it, take it out of the black market, then you put it out there, and then you control it like we do alcohol, like we do tobacco. Okay? I'm not saying this is the right answer, but answer.
I'm going to disagree, but go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then you can – but the part of the problem is you've got all this money and all this stuff going to these cartels. Okay? Right. They're destabilizing Mexico. All right? There was a woman yesterday that got kidnapped, American woman who's Mexican-American citizen, both, you know. Mm-hmm. Her family lives in Los Angeles. She got kidnapped 2 days ago in her backyard in her town of Pueblo Nuevo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, I don't know if that's a cartel thing, but these four other guys that got kidnapped and two of them got murdered about the same time that happened. That's the other one happened. The other one didn't get the news at the time because of the other one. But this kind of stuff happens all the time. You go down there and You don't let anybody know that you got any money or that you've got ties to people that might have money, because then you become a target for kidnapping.
Right.
Okay. But the problem is it's destabilizing the country because of the cartels and all the money that's going there, all the corruption that's going in there. The judges are corrupted, the local politicians, the national politicians.
I was going to ask you about that. You have an insight. You're married to a woman who was Hispanic, who is Hispanic.
She's Mexican. She's American now.
She's a Mexican citizen, but she's an American citizen now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you have special insight into the government there. The popular American belief, right or wrong, this is what most of us believe, is that Mexico is run by the cartels, not by the government, that everybody's paid off, everybody's bought and paid for.
It's partially true. It's both true.
Okay.
It depends on where you live. Okay. If you're in northern Mexico along the border, Sinaloa, Chihuahua, some of those states, yeah, it's cartels. Hmm. If you go down into the interior, it's more the government actually is control.
Mexico City?
Mexico City is probably it's controlled by the proper authorities for the most part, yeah.
Okay.
But I mean that's again, you know, all of this is in flux and is changing because every day, every single person that comes across the border owes the coyote $5,000 to $8,000. Okay? You multiply that by how many millions of people that have come across, you know, since Biden was president. But see, when you cut that, when Trump was president, he cut that down to, I don't know what, 500,000 a year, maybe?
Yeah, less
or
than that.
200,000
yeah.
a year?
Yeah.
Instead of 2 million, you know? And that's...
And he had plans on cutting it down even more.
Well, of course, you know, the wall and all the things that they're doing and supporting the agents on the border, trying to do everything. All of that adds up, and all of that puts a pinch in the cartel's pocketbook. Because now they can't get their drugs to market, they can't run their human trafficking operations and all their smuggling operations that they're doing. So that's going to put a huge pinch. So then what happens is, and you think, okay, now wait a minute. If we follow the money, who is benefiting from all of this money? Okay, which side? And if you've got American president that puts a worthless
crappy.
A worthless vice president who is so vapid in the head that she can't even speak a sentence as if she's talking to an adult, okay? And she goes down there and she doesn't even set foot on the border, let alone, you know, she tries to, you know, do a token trip down to El Salvador. By the way, that El Salvadorian president's doing some really amazing things. I don't know if you've been up to what he's doing. Oh, he's building prisons faster than he can. And if you're a member of an El Salvadorian gang, they throw you in prison. Good. And he is cleaning up that country left, right, and center.
Okay.
And but we got somebody who's so vapid and so moronic. Okay, I'll say that word. And she doesn't even know what her left or right. It's amazing.
Right.
And these are the two people that are running this country. That tells you how beautiful and wonderful this country is, that we can survive these imposters running our government.
Well,
sorry.
The thing that the message I'm getting from Rick Scott, from Jack Lancaster is, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, illegal immigration was costing us some of our, you know, some of the jobs that maybe Americans didn't want to do. You know, and there was welfare and things we worried about that were real concerns, but maybe not country altering concerns. Now, the worry isn't that, you know, they might come to and get the job at McDonald's or Jack in the Box. The worry now is that really bad actors, really bad characters are coming to this country, even up to Utah, to St. George, Utah, and they're bringing with them gangs, and they're bringing with them drugs, and they're bringing with them terrorism. That is a lot more serious stuff, Jack, than, you know, worrying about somebody taking my daughter's job at Jack in the Box.
Right. I will tell you that the people, and most of the immigrants are not from Mexico now.
Right.
They used to be, but they're not now.
Yeah.
But I will tell you that most of the people that are coming here to look for work, okay, they don't want to get involved in the politics. They all just want to work. They send their money back home. Most of the people I know, they're coming up here. They're not single men. They're married men. They lift their family and their wives and their children back home. They're sending money home. Here's their dream. Their dream is to be here for 4 or 5 years, 6 years, something like that, somewhere in that neighborhood. They're sending money home as much as they can. They're spending as little as possible here. They're working every waking minute. They want to work 7 days a week, 2 or 3 jobs. Okay, they send all that money home. They're building houses, Their dream is to build a house, and then once that house is built, and it's because they don't do mortgages, they pay as they go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so once that house is built,
they can't get a mortgage.
Right, it's paid for, and then they want to go home. Mm-hmm. That's their dream. They see this as a 5 or 7 year work, you know, stint, if you will.
Yeah,
and some of them obviously stay, but you've got to understand, they're not doing it to try to influence other than the bad guys that want to do the influencing to make their smuggling operations a little more easy for them to get by, okay? Because there is some bad guys on the border, on the American side, that are allowing some of this to happen as well.
Sure, sure. Guys on the take. Money talks,
yep.
Right?
Money talks, yep.
Money talks. Well, we pointed out problems. Do we have an answer? One of your answers was we've got to stop the demand. But I've been a war on drugs. Nancy Reagan, you know, just say no. That was great. It was a good idea. But is it realistic?
I am all for the American government and the DEA to put just as much money or a significant amount of money into education and help for people, and get people who are users off the track. Don't put them in the criminal system. I think we already do that now. We put them in a rehab, but we also have a different court system for the users.
Right.
The dealers, different story. You know, you throw those guys in jail and just make those penalties so much harsher. You don't let them out, and when the government, I call it propaganda, when the government does advertising. But propaganda can be positive. There can be positive. And just, you know, make it so ubiquitous.
Ubiquitous. Yeah, everywhere. Yeah.
So that the message of the damage and the message of the drugs, you know. So the government has a role in playing propaganda to get people to not take the drugs and to help people that are with it and to do that. There's a role there, okay? And also to help us do that. I feel like we're not doing enough. I feel locally here in Washington County, I think our local guys, our drug task force, and I'll tell you the biggest difference between Washington County and, let's say, Clark County, Nevada. Let's just call it what it is.
Okay.
We care more about the morality of our lives than a lot of other places do.
True.
Our LDS religion teaches us that. We try to live the religion, okay? We're trying to do a better thing, and you can see it. You can see it in the community. The city of St. George, and I think the rest of Washington County cities, do not allow gang graffiti to exist more than a week or two, wall.
Yeah.
Okay?
They're on the next day. Yeah.
Right. They're on top of that. That is a beautiful, wonderful thing that needs to be done in a lot of places, but they just don't care, or they can't, or for whatever reason. We have a homeless issue here. It's not very big. Once in a while, you'll see people panhandling on the corners over by the Costco or down in Bloomington or whatever.
Yeah.
And we've got a thing called Switch Point, you know, and that's a beautiful thing, okay? We take care of our own here, all right? And not everybody does that. If everybody lived in this country like we used to live in the 1950s and 60s in that way, like I think we kind of do here in some ways, you know, this world would be a heck of a lot better place. And I, for one, take my hat off to the vast majority of the folks here in this county that are doing their jobs so well. But it's also we, the people, that are doing our jobs well as well.
Well said. He's Jack Lancaster. Let me get a weather break in. We'll be back with more from Jack. We're going to talk about, automation. Is our machines, are they going to take everyone's job eventually? I don't know. We'll talk to Jack about it after this. Hey, welcome back. Thanks for joining me today on the show. My good friend Jack Lancaster is here, and we're not allowed to talk about his day job. Well, we can talk about it, but we can't talk about where it is. That's okay. Jack is he's got a pretty good little side hustle. He makes a lot of money on radio with
I make so much with you,
yes, you
buddy. It's embarrassing.
I think that's zero, but
that's why it's embarrassing.
a couple of texts. And by the way, if you want to call in and talk with Jack, it's 673-5890. Of course, it's a 435 area code, 673-5890.
To quote one of my favorite movies, there'll be no money, but when you die on your deathbed, you will receive total consciousness. So I got that going for me.
Total consciousness. Okay. If you want to text me, 435-467-5842. Got a few texts so far today. Let's see. Somebody really likes Jack. You need more guys like this on the air.
All right.
All right. And Jan says, let's see, drugs will not go away. It's part of the evil that afflicts this country and destroys families. We need to close the border.
I agree. The drugs will never go away.
Yeah.
Human suffering will never go away. It's part of our condition. It's part of who and what we are. And we do need to close the border because if you have a leak in your sinking ship, you got to plug the leaks.
Yeah.
And you got to bail.
Wanted to ask you about automation. One of the things that really bugs me is when I go to the grocery store and there's like one live, maybe two live checkers, and the rest of it is self-checkout. It bugs me because I go to the store and I pay these incredibly high amounts. I mean, a loaf of bread is $3 for crying out loud. Now, that's a cheap one. And then they expect me to check myself out.
Uh-huh.
Go to their little self-check thing. That drives me crazy. I want to talk to a person. If I have a coupon, I want to hand it to somebody and have them punch it in the keyboard. It just makes me crazy. So automation is taking over. It's funny. We thought it would eliminate manufacturing jobs, and it has somewhat. But it's actually getting to the service industry now, restaurants, stores. And so you as a business owner, I wanted to ask you about automation. Is there a place, is it going to take over?
The reason automation's occurring in Walmart and a lot of these places is because the price of labor's gone up. And,
and so
you eliminate all those cashiers that are standing there, sometimes with nothing to do, sometimes. And you eliminate that cost. So the cost to build that automated checkout, is that one-time cost, which is maybe as a year's salary for one check for one employee that works as a checkout counter, and then after that first year, your dollars
small
ahead
profit.
Yeah.
So, and that actually ties into an article I was reading about automation and about the cost and minimum wage. And you and I have talked about minimum wage in the past. Minimum wage, there should not be a federal minimum wage. Minimum wage should be what the market says you have to pay someone to do that job, right?
It's nobody's business but mine how much I get paid.
Right.
That's my business. A third party that comes in and says, no, you have to get paid X, whatever X is, to work a job. Well, that means that I'm giving over my personal sovereignty to a government, which is, in my mind, is unconstitutional. I, for the life of me, can't understand how it's constitutional. I don't get it. Minimum wage is the dumbest thing that we've ever come up with. It's created more unemployment in this country. And, believe it or not, half of the European countries don't even have minimum wage, even though as socialized as they are. Of course, they tax you to death over there.
Yeah.
We're not far behind. But minimum wage is immoral, completely immoral.
Well, and the article I was reading was talking about how minimum wage is forcing employers to get rid of people. It's raising unemployment because, like you said, if I can pay a one-time deal for an automated, a kiosk or whatever, you go to Costco trying to order a hot dog now from a human. It doesn't work that way. You punch in somebody.
Right.
But anyway, to go to a kiosk or an automated thing is cheaper in the long run for the employers than having a minimum wage now that is going to end up being 10, 15,
well,
20,
that's
whatever
if they change it, which hopefully they won't. But
it already is in a lot of states.
Well, states are going to do that. It's still unconstitutional. I mean, it's still because when you want to – the best recipe to – when you go to employ teenage people – mm-hmm. or underskilled people, or undereducated people.
Someone comes in and says, Jack, I need a job. I have zero skills.
Right. Well, you're not worth much to me as an employee. Right. I have to invest money into you before I can get money back. Because from an employer's point of view, an employee, for however much you're paying them, you need to triple or quadruple their cost per hour in productivity to get back out of them. They're a product that you offer, like the product on your shelves or the product that you sell to your customer. The employee labor, the face that you give the customer is also a product, and it has to come across as something that you can invest in and get a return from, or else it doesn't make sense, and you end up going out of business if you don't fix that. So a lot of times when you say, okay, well, I can do the same job with one person that before the automation it took two people, well, now I'm getting double the efficiency out of one person. and I don't have to pay that other person any more money.
Yeah.
You know, now the problem is if I'm a teenager and I have no skills, well, if the minimum wage says you got to pay me $10 an hour, well, I'm sorry, you're not worth $10 an hour. So I guess what I'm going to do is I'm going to get more time out of the people that are more productive and come back to me when you're a little older. You've got some skills somewhere else. Well, where else is he going to get those skills?
Right.
So the beautiful thing about it, and I'm being sarcastic here, is we're teaching our young folks not to know how to work. And that's not a good thing to do.
Right.
People need to learn how to work. It's a skill. It's a habit. It's not easy to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning or 6:30 in the morning or 8 o'clock in the morning, whatever it is, to get your butt out of the bed, get showered, get in the car, get you some breakfast, and get in somewhere and do some work. That is kind of, for a lot of people, for me, I'm a night guy. Getting up with you is a it's a chore, but I am happy to do it. But the good thing is for me, is I've learned the skill on how to get up early and have a little bit of self-discipline to get my butt in here and do a show with you. If you don't teach that to the young people, they'll never learn it. And so now, you know, we raise a bunch of kids who don't understand the meaning of work, who, you know, life's too easy for them. So when the crap really hits the fan, you know, I don't know.
I think that, you know, if somebody asked me, hey, none of your sons have gone into radio. Does that disappoint you? And I was like, no, it doesn't disappoint me. Number one, radio doesn't pay that well. But number two, I didn't teach my kids when I brought them to ball games to me and we were, you know, and I was staying up till 2 a.m. and I was showing them how to do stuff. I didn't teach them that stuff because I wanted them to learn how to be a sports writer or a sports broadcaster. I taught them that stuff because I wanted to show them that when it's time to work, it's time to work.
Right.
And I can relax and chill with the best of them when it's not time to work. But when it's time to work, you know, everything else falls away. And you focus on what you've got to get done.
And that's the beautiful thing about team sports. Yeah. I love team sports for children, for kids, for anybody. I still love playing basketball when I get a chance, even though my knees don't like it.
Yeah.
Is the discipline to practice, to do the things that you need to do to make yourself better in your weak spots. If you can't do a left-handed layup, you got to learn how to do a left-handed layup because once in a while in a game, you're going to need to learn how to do a left-handed layup.
Under pressure.
Yeah. Right. So all those things. And you know, we lose that when we don't have team sports for the kids, when we don't allow our children to be children, play outside and do whatever it is. There's a part of that that gets lost. There's a discipline that comes with that, too.
Participation trophies. Huh?
No. There has to be. If we live in a capitalist society, which we're losing on this banking thing, we can go down that rabbit hole if you want to. It's called a profit and loss system for a reason. You know, and these banks that are too stupid to stay in business because they made ESG more important than the money that their depositors and their investors have taken care of, have put into their banks, then what the heck are they got business being a bank anyway?
Right,
they should fail.
Let's go to the phone lines. Don on line one. Hi, Don. What's up?
Hi, gentlemen. Actually, my wife and I were watching a show called A Man Called Otto, and it was about an analog man in a digital world. And how the life changes around you, and you don't adapt to those changes. You know, some other, you know, underlying things going on with that too. But it rung true with me, the fact that you have kids that can't count change back to you. They don't know that there's a deviation, and you know the computer can't take care of the deviation because you only input what the stupid machine will allow. A computer is just a stupid machine and only knows what it tells you or what you tell it, so that it can only do certain parameters, and there's got to be a bridge somewhere in between where you can actually still have a human side to business, but you also have to understand that we're moving to a place where we need to train our kids to actually understand that everything's being mechanized and that you're going to have to lean into things like AI and to computer robot automation because that's the way everything's going. But one of the things that I really disagree with on Jack is I really do believe we need to prosecute the crime of illegal aliens in this country because it's not a victimless crime. I mean, granted, there's people who want to come up here and work. However, you have a company that's actually doing things legally in the right way. They're actually paying their taxes. They're doing the things and registering the things they have to do. And now they're being undercut by somebody who has to do none of that. What are your thoughts?
I agree. You should prosecute folks that are here illegally, but you also should prioritize the I think what they're doing now because of the manpower issue is they're prioritizing those that are the folks that are breaking the law in some fashion that's illegal, then they refer them over. Unless you're in a sanctuary city or sanctuary state, then they don't. Right. But I agree. They did break the law. They did come here without the law. Another thing is you can liken it to this. If the speed limit is 55 miles an hour down the freeway and everybody's going 75, you deserve a ticket. But the entire, you know, herd of cars going down the road is breaking the law. So, you know, it's a right, gray area.
Then we go back to that mediation thing of somewhere between human and digital, needs to be a response.
Well, I agree. But another thing is I am never for citizenship for a person that came over here illegal. That's
right.
In my opinion, that should be off the table from the get-go. Okay. Now, if you're a child and your parents brought you across the border, then I'm okay with, you know, considering that person, you know, some point in the future. But that the adult that willfully broke the law, now we can set up a situation, and I think we do, where we give them a legal status to stay, get them in the system. And I think that's another problem with the government, is we should allow these folks that want to come here and work hard to be able to get into the system so that more employers can hire them so they can pay their taxes and we can start setting them up. Because these people, they're being preyed upon. Big time.
No, I absolutely agree.
Okay.
There's nothing more beautiful than going to see a judge swear in new citizens.
Yes,
when you
and I've seen it.
When you see somebody actually take the oath, it's amazing.
It is a beautiful thing, and I agree with you. But the thing is if they're not going to keep this border secure, and they need to do it for two or three reasons. I'll give you two. One is to keep the drugs and the ne'er-do-wells on the other side and to keep them from coming in. That's number one. Protect our sovereignty as a country, number two. Protect our culture as a unique American culture, number three. And number four is to let everybody in the world know we have the rule of law here, and if you want to come here, you have to obey the law. Okay? I agree. Close the border. You've got to fix the leaks in the sinking ship first, and then you can deal with whatever else is going on after that happens. And we can have that discussion later. And I'm okay to have that discussion, but in the meantime, 100%, close the border to illegal immigration and trafficking and everything else and get a handle on who's coming across and know who they are.
Let's go to line two. Ryan, what's up, Ryan?
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. Thanks for calling, man.
Good. Hey, you know, I'm as conservative as they come. You know, I believe in, you know, the Constitution and our rights, and I'm very one who stand up for our rights. But when it comes to this, you know, traveling around the world and whether you have the right to immigrate or to not, you know, I'm not on board necessarily with the hard line, you know, close the border completely. And the reason I say that is because, you know, I believe that, you know, that God placed me here on earth and that earth is my place to live and that I have the right to go anywhere on this earth that I so desire. And I believe that everybody else has that same right as well. And the other thing is that it is the nature of all men to try to and it's their right also to earn a living, to make a living. And to do that in the easiest way you can. And when you can't make a living in one place, then you seek elsewhere. Or if you can't make a living in one way, you seek another way. And that is the right and the nature of any man to do. And so my question has always been is, why are people wanting to come to America? Why did they come here? And oftentimes, I've actually interviewed quite a few different Hispanics who have come here trying to understand, okay, why are you coming? Whether you come illegally or whatever, why are you coming? And what I find is that it goes along those same lines. They're just trying to make a living. They're just trying to find a way to survive in life and trying to survive. Now, oftentimes we create our own problem by having subsidies, welfares, you know, gifts of money, however it goes, subsidies that are not earned. And if people come here for that, then that's kind of like us putting a bird feeder up and then not wanting bird shit on our porch. you know, if you don't want...
You said the S word, did you hear that?
Okay, I'll be careful there.
Yeah,
but you get my point. You know, if we don't want the mess, then take down the bird feeder. But don't deprive people of their rights, because I do believe that regardless of what place on earth a person is born, that they have the right to the whole earth.
If,
you know, when you look at...
Let's let Jack respond for a second, then I do have to get a commercial break in.
All I can say is that on a basic level of human dignity and freedom and human sovereignty and individual rights, I agree with a lot of what you're saying. The difference is that we, the people of the United States, have decided that we have borders and we have processes and procedures to legally immigrate into these United States.
Legally.
And until if and when those laws are changed, that's the way it is right now. Fundamentally speaking, yeah, a man can live wherever he wants, but governments are created by other people in those lands to protect certain institutions and things of those countries. So if we, the people, change the laws of the United States and allow an open border, and by that I mean just let's get rid of the guard stations, let's just have a highway like we do from Utah to Nevada, then you know, there's a reason. I think there's probably very good reasons why we put those borders in place the way they are.
Yeah.
The sad part is we're not taking those laws seriously anymore.
All right, we'll be right back. Welcome back. We're talking border and immigration and that kind of stuff. And, you know, Jack, I'm reminded one time somebody told me, it was a friend of mine, actually a relative of mine, has Mexican family members.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to get too specific because I don't want anybody to know I'm talking about it. But he said, well, what would Jesus do? And I said, well, that actually really, really is beside the point on this one, because one of the things that Jesus taught way early was you obey the laws of the land.
Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's.
Exactly.
Yeah, that means exactly. Basically obey the laws of the land.
And if immigration is illegal, it is so far. I mean, it still is without, you know, without the proper paperwork. Then I believe that we should, you know, like you said, render unto Caesar. We should obey the laws of the land. Now, and then someone will
sounds like an article of faith that I've heard somewhere too.
Yeah, and then somebody says, well, yeah, but what about the Germans who obeyed Hitler? You know, aren't they going to be held responsible for what they may have done? And, you know, it gets really, really complex when you start going there. But I can tell you this. I believe it is still correct that we make every effort to obey the Constitution, to do what this country was founded on. I think this country was founded on holy principles. The Constitution is a holy document.
Yes, it is.
And you can't just throw that away.
I think the part of the problem, and I could be wrong, but I'll try to sum this up really quick.
Okay, you got 1 minute.
A lot of people, or a significant percentage of people who run for government office, do not do it for the purpose of service. They do it for the purpose of self-aggrandizement, if that's a word. And they do it for selfish reasons, for narcissistic reasons, for reasons to become popular, for reasons to do whatever somebody, you know, wherever the wind is blowing, and to get good press and to get reelected once they get there. And so by definition, they are an enemy of the Constitution in that way.
It's true.
Because they don't have a pure heart in their service.
Their goal is not to make the country better. Their goal is to get reelected.
Exactly. But not, or to get elected in the first place. And
right.
It's not, I don't know if it's the majority. I don't even know if it's a plurality of the politicians, but there's a significant percentage. And I think that is the motivation, or that is possibly one of the reasons why we're in the fix we're in right now with our country.
We're in a pickle. Build a wall. That's what we need to do. All right. Thank you, Jack.
You're welcome, sir.
Great job as always.